Yes, you're at the right session here. just a quick PR, sorry, for a conference that's coming up for those people who are maybe in soil microbiology or biochemistry. It's an ongoing series we have with extracellular enzymes. Any rate, it's a pleasure to be here, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak today to this in recognition of the Year of the Soils by the UN, and to Veronica and Jennifer for organizing this session. I'm going to talk about work that's moving to another part of the world, to West Africa, to Senegal, and some work that has sort of evolved and been going on for longer than I'd like to admit, but Senegal is as far west as you can go in West Africa, and if you fly into Senegal, you're going to hit Dakar and probably get caught in a mind-numbing traffic jam like this. But the good news is you can get all your shopping done. So if you need bananas for dinner or for breakfast the next morning or tomatoes or you need China, there's probably, or a cell phone, there's probably somebody coming by who will sell you one eventually. So the time's not totally wasted in a traffic jam. The other thing, we have NFL fans throughout the country. But most of the people, of course, live out in the rural areas and are in subsistence farming without running water or electricity, and their livelihood is really dependent on dryland agriculture in the semi-arid part of the world, and particularly with crops like sorghum and millet as their main source of carbohydrates. I got involved in Senegal about 15 years ago, and I was still at Oregon State University. This is the funding stream I've had over the years. I've been fortunate to provide a robust funded project. And I want to start out just briefly sort of trying to acknowledge the many people who've been involved in the project, and I can't possibly do that all, acknowledge them all here, but just to sort of point out the number of institutions that we've worked with and those in the true collaborators, the co-PIs and so forth, their institutions, their names are in yellow. And the ones in white are the number of people that we've trained over the years. So we've had a wide range of African, U.S. Graduate students, postdocs, and also undergraduate interns that have been able to participate in this project. And that's been a wonderful part of this whole project, is to see people who perhaps have never been in a developing country transform themselves and adapt to that kind of situation and actually able to do pretty high-powered research. And this is some of the original people I worked with in the very beginning, who are just a great, great bunch of people, especially Modu Sain and Aminata Bataille. These are our first set of African graduate students that we had on the project. And on our second set, we were with the PIER program at NSF, which required that we work primarily with American students and scientists. So this time in our current project, we have a cadre of American U.S. Graduate students who are working on the project. The other component that we've run with this, especially this last time, is a short-term training course for early career scientists that ran for about a month, that involved lectures by some stated with some distinguished lecturers who were particularly attuned to tropical soils and to molecular biology, and it was a mix of half the students were from the U.S., or the early career folks, it was postdocs and graduate students. And then the other half, which was funded by NSF, and the other half were Africans funded by our collaborating French partners. So it also involved a mini research project where they actually, within two plus weeks, went out and developed their own hypothesis and did a very small research project. Which in one case, actually one team published a paper out of this that just came out this past year. And of course, an important part of this is the cultural and exchanges and being able to get out to villages and to see agriculture in a developing country, and for all the camaraderie that happened as a part of this. And even today, those folks who were in the first round are still communicating on Facebook and other social media and interacting, which is one of our goals for all of this. So getting more to the research we've been doing, and I want to preface this that I'll probably run out of time. I always put too many slides in these things, and we may have to cut it off. Just cut me off when the time's there, drag me off the stage. But at any rate, as I said, the folks, the rural people, and the majority populations in these countries all through West Africa are dependent on agriculture in one way or another. And the challenge you have in this environment is that these landscapes are being, to some extent, degraded by overpopulation, intensive agriculture and livestock operations, and really stripping sometimes the landscape for firewood. And of course, this part of the world, we're worried about the encroachment of the desert, although that, of course, is very much dependent on climate potentially, not easily tied necessarily to management, but it definitely is a concern. So in this part of the world, you're really concerned. You have a couple of challenges. One is subsistence farmers who don't use external inputs for the most part, and there's also a limited infrastructure to even deliver them inputs if they could use them. And then on top of that, we have low primary productivity because there's of the low rainfall. So a key part of managing these systems really is efficient water and nutrient usage. And the central part of that is the soil and managing soil organic matter. And even if you add external fertilizer inputs, yields will continue to go down if you don't at the same time be adding organic inputs, especially on these very sandy soils. And the drier the environment, that becomes a much bigger problem. So what are the solutions to this situation? One is the historical, what's called the Parkland system with trees, which of course is a one strategy. But another one we kind of stumbled on was to look in a part of, when I first got involved, we were searching for a research project and started noticing these shrubs, which at the time, which was the late 90s, nobody had really studied them, and yet you found them extensively, to varying degrees in farmers' fields. And there's really two species that you find in farmers' fields, Pelostigma reticulatum in the wetter regions and Gyrus senegalensis in the drier regions. This is in Mali, the next country just east of Senegal. And this is a field with Gera. In the dry season, you can see the wheat millet plants that were there from the previous summer are now laying down in the dry winter season. And this is the field right next to it. For whatever reason, this farmer has taken all the shrubs out. But this, so we started to think about this, and I started to ask more questions about how they're managed and basically what happens, at least in Senegal. This isn't true of all of West Africa, but they coppice the shrubs in the early springtime, put them in a pile, and then unfortunately, at least from a soil scientist's perspective, they put a match to it. So I'm thinking we're struggling with trying to find biomass in this environment, and here it's going up in smoke. Now, of course, these farmers have been in business for many generations, and they don't do things necessarily for no reason at all. But they do like to have a nice, clean seed bed, but then you end up with this rather stark landscape of just burn piles and really very little organic inputs going into these soils. And what allows this system, so what they do typically then is they plant the crop, which in Senegal is primarily either millet or groundnut, and then the rains come, the crop comes up, and they might do some minor tillage. But you can see in the foreground of the picture here, there is one of the shrubs in the field. So the crop comes up, the shrub, and of course the shrubs keep growing because they're there, but then they treat it like a weed, and they cut it back for some period of time, and then they lay that residue back on the top of the soil. So that's a good thing, it's not being lost. So what is, there's a lot I could say about this, so I'll just sort of skip to the first point, which is the major yield response we've seen with the system once we started studying it. We set up two long-term sites, one with Gera and the other with Pelostigma. And especially with Gera, in the first 4 years, and we're into our second, actually almost 10 years now, this is the plots, what they look like with Gera, and you see this very dramatic response, and we saw this right off the bat with Gera. With Pelostigma, it took longer. It was more like 5 to 6 years when we started to see this type of response. And this is the data from the first 4 years, and the data from the second four to 5 years is very similar to this for Gera. And for Pelostigma, as I said, it's also showing a yield response. And I think tomorrow one of my students, Matt Bright, will be talking about these. His whole talk is devoted to these plots. And if you go out to farmers' fields, we've measured yields there, and you see the same pattern in farmers' fields where you have the shrubs, you see this yield response. And so the question, and you find these, then you find these two shrubs throughout this, throughout West Africa, pretty much anywhere from 200 millimeters rainfall up to 800 to 1,000 millimeters. And the crops may change, but the primarily switching from millet to sorghum perhaps, or to cowpea in some cases, but you still find these two shrub species found throughout this whole region. So we believe what we've been finding in Senegal is very applicable to this whole region. And I should say that since we started working now in the last 5 to 7 years or so, particularly in Burkina Faso, there's a lot of research going on with these shrubs as well. So what I'd like to do is then work backwards is to at least give some information on what we think is happening as to why we're getting this large crop response. So one thing, of course, straight away would be you get with the shrubs, you get a better quality soil. There's more organic matter. We've done pea sorption studies and show there's less pea sorption, increased nutrient availability, and increased fertilizer efficiency. This is the root system for Gera, so that is a source of turnover. So just one correlation with that shows a strong relationship with the effect or the importance of organic matter in these soils is particulate organic matter, which is the undecomposed plant residue or microbial debris, and you see a very striking linear relationship really between particulate organic matter, and in this case particulate organic matter that's really coming from the shrub system and the yields that you get and the biomass that's produced. Another really central thing that we've found important part is the whole area of water relations. Besides the better quality soil, of course, that would help water relations, we've Fred Cazito, who was our first PhD student on this, on the hydrology side, showed that, in fact, these shrubs do what's called hydraulic lift. And these shrubs go very deep, so they'll go down to the top of the water table, and that water then is small amounts, not large, are moved at night. When photosynthesis stops and the stomata close, but the water keeps moving up just along a water potential gradient from the wet subsoil to the dry surface soil. So we felt that this had a lot of implications for maintaining microbial activity and decomposition, mineralization, nutrients all through the dry season, which normally you would say in that environment nothing would happen. But with what we've been able to show with hydraulic lift, that indeed those processes move forward. And then, of course, the other thing would be, is this water really helpful for a crop that's growing adjacent to it? And our most recent work we've done is to actually look at deuterium, where we put labeled deuterium down in the root system of the shrub and then track that through the shrub into the crop next to it. And so this is the signal we got with deuterium on the shrub in the leaf tissue. So you can see a nice diurnal kind of response here, which is typical of hydraulic lift. It happens at night, so you get this spike for 2 days, and then it goes back down to the control. And here's the millet plant growing right next to it, and we see a nice spike showing the uptake of this deuterium, giving us pretty good confirmation that indeed water is being transferred from the shrub to the millet plant. The other important thing we found that besides hydraulic lift, it also improves recharge of the groundwater. So you kind of have the best of both worlds with these system. On one hand, when it's too dry, there's water moving up. When it's too wet, which you may not believe can happen in Senegal, but you can get downpours and have very severe erosion events in this part of the world. And so it's very helpful to have these shrubs that are actually taking that water and moving it back into the groundwater. Then to further kind of confirm what we were seeing with deuterium, we ran a simulated drought experiment last year. And I think you can see, and it was roughly, I think, about 7 to 10 day drought period was imposed. And this is a very common thing that happens in this part of the world because oftentimes you plant, the rains come, the crop comes up, and then it stops raining. So essentially what we think we see here is that these shrubs actually can help a crop through these drought periods. It's not enough to grow a crop from beginning to end, but it looks like it can be very important in helping those the crop through those drought periods that are very typical in this part of the world. The other area that we've been pursuing then is looking for beneficial microorganisms. We have a lot of data that we've generated on this. I won't be presenting a lot of that, but we do have evidence that indeed the shrubs harbor beneficial microorganisms, and we find them on the millet plant. Now, whether how effective they are in doing these beneficial properties is we need to pursue further. We are pursuing the specifically nitrogen fixation and looking for diazotrophs in the NIF gene. But the other interesting beneficial organism that we've been looking at is mycorrhizal fungi, both in their ability first to perhaps have better inoculated or infected crops that are and more sporulation. And then the other kind of interesting thing we're in the middle of really figuring out is whether these shrubs can do what's called a common hyphal network. And so we're in the midst of looking at this data, and also as a part of this is a deuterium study, which will perhaps give us some confirmation. We don't have that data yet. But going back to what we've found with these shrubs is essentially they allow a more diverse, this is just microbial biomass beneath the shrub and outside the shrub. And so these two lines show the levels at the beginning. 4 minutes? Okay. So beneath the shrub, basically it's maintaining the microbial biomass. And I just put in text here, basically in the same region, what we find is that the diversity, the activity, it's all maintained at a much higher level all through the dry season. So that has implications for this part of the world where, as I said before, you would think that not everything shuts down in the dry season, but indeed what we're finding is that undoubtedly because of hydraulic lift, these processes continue, and between water and perhaps exudates and so forth, we maintain a more diverse community. So going back to the mycorrhizal fungi, we've pursued this using microcosms with exclusion barriers that do not only allow the hyphal mycorrhizal hyphae into the microcosm and exclude the roots of the shrub. And just briefly, what we think the preliminary evidence is that we got a larger growth of the plant when we allowed the hyphae to be connected. And so this is just preliminary data. This is not for sure, but it looks like there's potentially some interaction with the mycorrhizal hyphae being a connection between the shrub and the millet plant. So we've got 20 plus publications and counting, and most of these papers are from the first phase one, and the second phase are really coming out right now. So just to conclude, We view these shrubs basically as a mother plant or as a resource island for nutrients, for water, and that with that then we get a promotion of beneficial microorganisms, diversity, activity. They are performing hydraulic lift. And in terms of crop productivity, I didn't show this data, but we've also done, we had an experiment we ran for 4 years looking at just the residue itself to see if there's some negative effect of the residue going in the soil, because it could have been a allelopathic effect. But basically it took 2 years to see any effect, but after 2 years we saw yield response when we only put the residue back in the soil, again showing how important getting organic amendments is into these soils. Water balance studies indicate we do not compete for water. It's partially because of where the root system are. It's somewhat different between the shrubs and the crops, but probably it's also because of hydraulic lift. And we definitely have been able, the one picture I showed you of the plus and minus shrubs, that's an optimized system of about 1,500 shrubs per hectare, and all of the residue went back in the system. So we've been able to show that you can manage these systems without burning. It does require cutting the stems in pieces about this big, which is a potential labor issue that we need to pursue with farmers. Are they willing to do that? But in fact, if you go to Burkina Faso, you'll find farmers that are already actually doing this and using the residues quite effectively by putting it back in the system. So we believe an optimized system, no burning, is definitely feasible from what we've generated so far, and certainly what we also see our co-scientists doing in Burkina Faso. Lastly, another interesting thing we found is that these shrubs actually decrease the time to maturity. At every growth stage, it's quicker if you have the shrubs there. So that's important in a semi-arid environment because of the erratic rainfall. So the quicker you can get through your growth and up to to maturity, the better off you are. And it's roughly about 15 days sooner if you have the shrubs present. So with that, I guess that's it. We made it. It's a miracle.